I'm so proud of our game right now. Number one, we have a great commissioner in Rob Manfred. Tony Petitti's right-hand guy is our chief operating officer, as smart a guy as I've ever met, understands entertainment and television as well as anyone. And that's why we've had such a successful, not only postseason run, besides obviously the great players, but if you look at the All-Star game, if you look at the audio, if you look at what Aaron Judge did, it's a great combination. And I got to tell you, I think, and you may not want to hear this, but I think with just what's happening in the NFL, look, I'm a big NFL fan.
Yeah.
They've left a little opening
oh,
for
no
us.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
And they continue to do it, and we continue to flourish, and our game's on fire.
And the young players are getting better. It's a bit different names.
Are awesome. And we've never had more people watching postseason and in-season baseball than we are right now in 25 years.
Here back, R2C2. Excited, man. I got my boy here, man. He's like a big brother, bro.
That's right.
All these guys are like my big brothers, right? Andy, G,
it's
this
true.
Guy.
I'm just glad you have so many big brothers because it helps out R2C2
a lot.
It's
a good family.
It is. Alex Rodriguez in the building. Thanks for being with us, Alex.
Great being here. I really admire both of you. Obviously, CC's like my little brother and love him. And I know you and I have come close the last few years, and I think you do great work. And obviously, CC, I look forward to you finishing a great Hall of Fame career.
I'm glad Alex even has time like for us or to be in New York. Dude, you don't stop, man. Like, you don't stop. It's been crazy.
Stay moving all over the place, bro.
It's
I love
crazy.
It.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. It's so much fun, though. It is so much fun. I'm having the time of my life. And I never thought, look, you know, it's funny. We all wonder, no matter who you are or what you do, what the second act looks like.
Yeah.
I mean, right? I talked to CeCe for the last 5 years about, you know, what's next, right? When I played, I thought about what's next. But there's a fear element, right? You really don't know what's out there because to a degree, we've been institutionalized by this game. For me, I played for almost 25 years and CC, 20 or so, and you really don't know what's next. And I was actually scared about what the hell was going to happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, after my suspension in 14, I was like a pariah. Like, nobody wanted to talk to me. Nobody would return my phone calls or shells. And it was quite embarrassing, but, you know, coming back in 2015 and then kind of building some momentum, going back to the postseason. All of that was just a tremendous time, and I'm so fortunate to have the opportunities that I have now. Also to be a full-time dad with my daughters who are growing up like beans. I mean, it's incredible, and that's obviously the most rewarding part of my life. And so I'm just really grateful and fortunate.
Yeah, I'm glad to see you doing whatever you want to do. I mean, obviously you got all the stuff going on, but you could easily be a manager.
It's a spot open, dog.
Good. He went there.
We could have got on that, man.
Look, I will say that, you know, being a manager for the New York Yankees is almost like POTUS. You know, it's like one of those jobs that, that everybody and anybody should or would pay attention to.
Sure.
Because the New York Yankees are the greatest franchise in sports, not only in America, but in the entire globe. And whether you're in China or Dubai or Australia, everybody knows that logo. Even if you're not a baseball fan, you understand that New York Yankees are the best franchise in the greatest city in the world. So I do wish them luck. I know that they have, I think, like 14 names in a
list. Yeah, exactly.
And I do wish Howe and Cashman the best of luck on that.
Do you think you could? Would you ever be interested? I mean, this job, any job in managing someday, you think?
I've never thought about that.
Yeah.
I've always thought about, you know, one day ownership could be interesting.
I'm going to tell you this, though. He'll be a great one.
See?
Manager, for
Thank
sure.
Thank you.
And CeCe's very honest on R2C2, so this is not just because you're here.
No, but just like his baseball IQ was off the charts. I've never seen or played or talked to a player that's as smart as he is, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, from every aspect of the game, you know, he'll be able to manage, I think.
And I feel like he always would take along young kids, too, like whether it was like Robbie and Melky or – you know, the way even you work with Gary this year,
even
right?
Judge, too.
Yeah. Like, I mean, so there's – are we pitching Alex on the job? Like, it sounds like we kind of are. But it's a grind, right? I mean, it's a total consuming job, and probably for – even though it's a nice salary, probably for less that you could do with other ventures as well. Not that, you know, that's a primary concern, but
– yeah, anybody who takes on this task playing in New York, I mean,
right.
It is the best, but it's also the toughest job in America, right? I mean, you're basically dealing with the greatest fan base that expects a lot from you. Like the Dodgers, I was just saying that, like the Yankees, nothing but a world championship is acceptable, right? And even in a rebuild year, I mean, the fans are hungry to win a championship, rich tradition of winning, and I mean, the way they came out this postseason was unbelievable. And I wasn't here. I was covering for Fox, of course. But, I mean, the energy, like, it just jumped off the page in television.
Yeah.
And it gave me goosebumps because that's what I remember in 09. That's what I remember in the old stadium.
Yes.
But even to a higher degree. So the future's so bright. Baseball's doing great. We have great ownership here in New York. I'm very proud to be an advisor to Hal Steinbrenner. And I work very closely with him. And I love what CeCe did. I love what the future holds. And I just can't wait for spring training to start. 100 days away.
How about that? I can't. I got a couple vacations and shit to go on, dog. You've been chilling all summer, man.
I can't wait because I don't have to go.
That's right, man.
Well, I was going to ask you, what do you miss, if anything? Like, what do you miss the most? Because, I mean, obviously, like, it's coming up for me, too. And, you know, like you said, I mean, I'm good with, I mean, I said this before, I'm good with whatever happens, mm-hmm. you know, this year, next year, whatever. But like, what you think? I mean, what do you miss the most? Like being around the guys, or you know, coming to the park, or actually playing. You know what I mean?
I miss the clubhouse. I miss the clubhouse. What I miss most is the 3 hours of competition in between the lines. I miss my four at bats. I miss the conversations in the dugout, in the clubhouse, pre and post game. You know, when you're in it, like we were in it. You're all you have. I mean, you have your family and you have your teammates. Mm. And ultimately, it is a difficult fucking game. I got to tell you that. It is fucking difficult. And for someone like me who had a historic career, I mean, this fucking game brought me to my knees so many times, to the fact where you're almost fucking in tears, you know, when it puts you to bed and gets you up at bat. And you just look and you're fucking confused, right? Mm. And CeCe seen me like that. I've seen him in the same state, and he's also seen me in the highest. Just like we saw each other in 09 when we were at the height of our game, right? Yeah. But I think that interaction, that compassion, mm-hmm. that, you know, giving each other tools to be able to navigate difficult situations. I know Pettit did that for CeCe to a degree. I think I did it.
Big time for me.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Him and Andy. Yeah.
You rely on Alex in that way, too.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Andy, CeCe, I had Mariano did it for me as well. Edgar Martinez did it for me. And sometimes you understand that. You almost take it for granted, right? But if you have these, like, soldiers around you, regardless, you know it's never going to get too far off the highway. Like, I mean, yeah. You may get a little bit on the left lane or the right lane, but you're never going to go off track because you have the surrounding crew. And that's kind of what I miss, that camaraderie the most.
I could see that, man. Because there's something different, right? Because in your job, everybody has their teams, right? You have your team now with A-Rod Corp and all the different, mm-hmm. the million ventures that you're involved mm-hmm. in. But there's something about when you go out as a team and compete and having each other's backs and knowing that you're, what you talked about, going to aid along the journey. You're mm-hmm. going to support in this way. You were talking about last episode with Judge and mm-hmm. his struggles in the postseason. The thing that stood out most to you was the way the guys kind of rallied around him and helped him. That's a tough thing to duplicate outside of whatever sport you play's world. Like, as much as you can do all these other amazing things, like, I could see where that's hard. Like, where do you get that back? How do you replicate that?
And we're together for so long out of February to November. Like, you know, this is your family. Like you said, you know, that you have your family and then you have your baseball family. So, yeah, I mean, I could see how that would be tough, you know, missing that and not being around the guys. You know what I mean?
You know, you have so many of these, in the business world, you have all these guys that went to these great schools, whether it's Harvard Business School or Stanford Business School. And, you know, they're in their 50s and 60s, and they were like, yeah, we're classmates in 1978. We came out of Harvard Business School, and, you know, we went to this private equity firm or this hedge fund. And to a degree, baseball is the same way. When you win a world championship like we did in 09, that bonds you forever. That 25-man roster will be forever remembered, right? And then when you break it down even to a smaller nucleus and you say, really, the nine and the five, then forever your brothers. I mean, to a point where it doesn't matter what CeCe needs. Me and Nat talk in 6 months. If he needs something, he knows I'm there like it was 09.
Right.
And that magic, that bond, is hard to duplicate that in anything else besides high school or college, probably.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that 09 team, by the way, you two both, I'm going to say, you beasted that postseason, both of you.
Though, you know what I mean? Like, how good that team was.
Yeah, dude, that team,
like, when you're in it, you're like, fuck. But, like, that team was incredible.
Dude, you guys.
Top to bottom, bro. Like,
I remember seeing something like, I don't know who did it. Maybe it was the Daily News or something, but they did, like, greatest Yankee teams of all time. Now, think about the organization you're talking about there and the historic teams. And it had you guys, that 09 team, it was like, it had you guys, like, I don't know, it was like top seven Yankee teams mm-hmm. of all time, which maybe on some list, top seven would seem flimsy. That's like dude, those we're talking about Ruth and Gehrig and Mantle and all, but you guys were stacked. You think about your infield is loaded with Hall of Famers, yeah. right? I mean, you had Mo closing games. You had you and Andy. AJ pitched great. That team was just ridiculous.
And sometimes you need to take a step back. Like CZ said, when you're in it and you're so close to it, you really can't appreciate it, right?
Right.
But when you take a step back and then a decade back, you look back and you go, holy smokes.
Yeah.
I mean, if we had to put that team together now, all in their prime, that's a $500 million payroll.
Exactly. That's the Astros super. In a couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then the leadership, right, from Mariano to Jeter to you know, Tex and CeCe, myself, and a young emerging Robinson Cano.
Right.
Matsui, who wins the MVP.
Yeah.
You know, CeCe wins the MVP in the ALCS.
Should have been his.
And so on. So forth. We could
have
shared
it. Should have been a go.
But that's what's really phenomenal. And one of the things that I think I would say to CeCe in your next, you know, few years is when I came back after my suspension. And it was some dark, dark nights. I mean, it was a lonely year. In yeah. a weird way, I actually needed that year to get my shit straight in many ways, you know, not only to turn the lens inward, but also to just detox from the craziness that I created for myself. But as I came back, the one thing I kind of prayed about was that I would come back different, that I would come back full of appreciation and being grateful. And when I did that, regardless if I went 4-for-4 or 0-for-4, I went home and I put on some Journey. I went home and smiled and laughed that I'm 40 years old and I'm wearing pinstripes and I'm hitting third for the New York Yankees and we're on our way to the playoffs. And in a way, I wish, like, boy, I wish I could have been this guy for 20-something years. Mm. But I said better late than never.
Yeah. Yeah. See, what's awesome to me is I remember when you came back, there was definitely like that, oh, like this seems like a renewed guy, right? This seems like a different guy. But what's the question when somebody observes that or experiences it? How long is it going to last? Like, mm-hmm. is this going to continue? We're however many years later, and it feels like you forget like the whole being the same guy thing, which you have been and are, but also like it seems like you've been able to maintain that mm-hmm. perspective throughout in the aftermath of that. How do you think you've been able to?
Yeah, I think it's just being grateful and appreciative, right? And being connected to that and understanding. I've often said, look, 2014 was the most challenging year of my entire life, and it was the most painful. But I thought if I went into it with the right attitude and I can actually learn from it and build from it and do work on myself, that when I came out of it full of appreciation, that I can actually, I may look back one day and say, this may be the best thing that ever happened to me.
Yeah.
Because it allowed me to make a paradigm shift.
Kind of sounds like me going to rehab.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Same thing, like, where I entered at and didn't know what was going on, prayed about it, and came out a better man for it. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes you go through some of those hard things, and you come out on the other side, and you know what I mean? Like, it's you're better for it. You know what I mean?
And you know what happened to me? It was almost like not a lot of people in their careers have a chance, forced or unforced, to have a sabbatical, right?
Yeah.
And that was unnecessary for sabbatical for me, but taking that time off, some things happened that were very interesting. People started falling off the tree very quickly.
Yeah. Mm.
So it started to crystallize things for me, like who was truly my friend, who truly cared about me, the person, the human being, without the home runs, without the world championships, without the contracts. And all of a sudden, when I came back, I'm like, okay, 95% is gone. I'm only left with 5%.
You feel lighter, huh?
I feel lighter. I'm like, shit, I don't have to worry about all these fucking people.
You gotta fly this guy in, right? Take this motherfucker to dinner. Like, man. You got your real people with you, right?
When I came back, I'm like, this is great. I only have to text like 5 people back.
That's great, man. See, now, did you feel that way as well, CeCe, when you came through on the other side, that like it crystallized some things for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, I had a lot of support, you know what I mean? Yeah. And, you know, from top to bottom, everybody supported me. So, I mean, I just felt like loved, you know what I mean? From the other side where, you know, I was having a tough time dealing with that, with the drinking and all that, coming through on the other side, feeling like, wow, all these people do love me and I have a lot great support system. Let's go do this. You know what I mean?
Mm. You know what I think is cool about, like, in both circumstances is neither of you are... That sounds a little weird, right? As someone who speaks for a living.
You
that,
get paid to speak.
Exactly. But not today. No. Neither one of you. There was a word I was missing. One. Neither one of you is defensive about like what you went through, right? Like you own it. And I feel like in general, we talk about that as a freeing tactic, but I can see it on both
of you. Oh, no, it's 1,000% freeing.
Right?
Like, yeah, I mean, me trying to hide drinking and from my teammates and all these people that I love and all that stuff, and then all of a sudden going to rehab and it's out there, everybody knows, I could be myself.
Yeah.
Like, I feel great every day waking up. Like, you know what I mean? This is the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Like, I'm freed. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel good about it.
And I know, because even if I say, like, sometimes I've maybe wanted to, like, ask CeCe something, I'm, like, treading lightly, and he's like, no, cuz, ask what you want to ask. Like, you're like, it's given you the ability to be this open book.
Yeah.
And I feel like that happened to you, too, where it's like, you know, there's obviously a self-deprecating element, which I always think is endearing to people, but it's also, I think, freeing to the self to be like, oh, yeah, this was me. This is what I dealt with. That's
what's
okay.
What's crazy about Al is that, like, for me and him have always been great. So we've always had that open line of communication. So I never saw what everybody else. It was me and him have always been tight. So whether it's texting or going through baseball conversations or life conversations, he was always there for me, and I was always been there for him at the same time. So, you know, 2014 coming back, all that, he was always the same to me.
You knew you guys are good,
no matter what.
Yeah,
no matter what.
Why do you think you guys connected so quickly as teammates?
I mean, first of all, I always thought that CeCe was, besides being kind of a historical, unique talent, you don't have too many left-handers that come into the league at 20 years old throwing 100, right, with great control. And then you meet him, and he's this world-class talent. You put him in this great, great high pedestal. But then you meet the human being. You meet his mother. You meet Amber. And they're all phenomenal, right? I mean, he's gonna end up in Cooperstown.
Thank you.
I love. but he's also a Cooperstown human being. And that's why it was unanimous. I've never seen a guy go to what the deal he had before the postseason, and everybody was, including me, 100% supportive.
Right.
And that was just indicative of the equity that he had built both on and off the field with the fans, with family, with friends, with our families. There was no better testament of approval to who this young man is to what happened that year.
Thank you.
When you think about 2009, what is there a moment from the celebration that still stands out to you guys? Is there any
from the celebration?
Yeah, or any? It doesn't have to be the celebration, but I'm just thinking, like, is there something from that night or that
from
run?
From that night,
still,
for me, I mean, for the run, I mean, I got a million.
Of course, of course.
From that night, like taking the lap around the stadium, and you know, around the warning track, and like slapping the fans.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm running with Andy and Mo. It's like a dream. Like, you watch this shit on NBC. Like, you know, you watch Bob Costas call this. And I'm, like, in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was the greatest thing ever for me. Like, that was so cool.
How about for you, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things. Number one, I'm a great baseball nerd. I mean, yeah. I can admit that, and I've always been. But I probably heard, I have to admit this, I've never said this before.
Yeah.
I've probably heard Joe Buck's call at least 500 times.
And the Yankees are back on top.
You got it,
so
too.
So how many times have I heard that shit?
No, the Dick chair, and the Yankees are back on top for the 27th time.
I love it.
What I remember about it is Mo, like CeCe, was I just saw Mo in the World Series, like brothers. I mean, there is no second thoughts there. But I think that everyone, to a degree, my favorite player, ironically, growing up was Dan Marino. And you think about guys like Charles Barkley, who had this incredible career and never had a chance to win a championship. And obviously for me, the pressure was building because I was getting older and I played for a long time and had this kind of historical career but without a ring. And there's a hollowness to it. And I feel the crap out of that. I had a lot of fear that it's so hard to win. We have to be healthy. We had AJ come in. We had CeCe come in. Teixeira come in. But we all had to stay healthy, and then we all had to perform. And Philadelphia was a great team. The Angels were a great team. And we were down 0-1 to Minnesota, right? Yeah. So when you think about it, it's kind of daunting to say, man, that was actually really, really hard. But I think while Victorino was hitting the last hitter, he had, like, I guess, a 7-8 pitch at bat against Mo before he had grounded to Cano. I had my entire family. Now, I had four seats there that I've had forever. They were my seats. And I probably had like 30 people like bunched around. Security obviously let them all in. My mother, my sister, my aunt, my brother, my nephews, my daughters. I mean, it was like, holy shit. I was almost in tears.
Yeah.
And I looked over there and I'm like, it took everything in my power. not to just break down. Of course, when Grandbaba Cano, Teixeira, the Yankees are world champs for the 27th time, literally, if you look at that video carefully, Mariano goes to cover first and immediately makes a U-turn and comes running right at me. Right.
Yes.
Cano comes right at me. Tex comes right at me. Yeah. And it was awesome because it was like, it was just that moment, you know?
You know what? I was just going to bring that up. Bill Webb, who was the director then, he made like a key, this is a TV nerd thing, but like a key cut there because for me, the iconic shot of the final out is you. When all of a sudden, because you jump up and everybody's coming at you because it was like,
I mean, he did that. You know what I'm saying? Like, he got some big homers, dude, some big hits. Like, that was, he carried us there.
His own nine. But you know what's funny? The most, we're going to talk about you like you're not here. The most ridiculous thing he did that year, though, was his this two home runs and seven ribbies in the one inning to get to 30 and 100 in the final regular season game.
Well, that's
one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
They walked Tex, right?
They walked him or hit him. And
they hit him because they thought that I hit Carlos Pena.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Okay, so just to give some context, just for anybody who's listening and doesn't know.
They thought I hit Carlos Pena on purpose.
Okay.
And then that at bat coming up, they threw at Tex.
And this was the final regular season game of 2009 against the Rays. Alex had how many seasons straight of 30 and 100 had you had? 13
11.
Or something?
It was something like 11 or 12.
He had some absurd amount, and but he missed the beginning of the year because of hip surgery. So he's at 28 and 93 going into that game, and you're just thinking like, okay, well, you know, he still had a good year, but he's going to fall short of 30 and 100. And then that inning, so they hit.
I think they either hit Tex or walked him or something. And
I think they hit him because he was pissed.
I think they hit him too because he was pissed too, yeah.
And that was when you, that was before the grand slam.
It was runners on second and third, two outs, and I think they hit him.
Yeah.
And then he comes up with 29 and 96.
Yeah. Which he had gotten earlier that friggin' inning.
Right.
Like, dude, that was absurd, man.
And he smashed that ball to right center. I still remember that like it was yesterday.
Do you
remember? But the biggest thing for me, 09, was when you came back from the hip surgery, May, off Guthrie. Three-run homer, first inning.
First swing.
First everything. And then me and Savelli went out and threw a complete game.
Three-nothing. Three-nothing.
Yeah. That was Savelli's first start.
And Cece, didn't you share a story with our boy Pep that, you know, of course, 09 was your first year. I go and have surgery, and I'm in Colorado rehabbing, and the team does not get off to a good start.
No.
And stadium is rumbling a little bit, and we have all these big expectations. And I'm supposed to come back like a week later, and I get on the phone with Hal and Randy and Cash, and they're like, hey, big boy, if you're ready to go, I think we're ready. And I said, yeah, fuck it, let's go. So I go down to Tampa. I'm supposed to go down there for 4 days. You know, Zillow, hey, Randy's on line too. How you doing, big boy? We're sending a jet. Let's go. So I get to, get to the stadium on 4 o'clock. Zillow meets me. I have a little press conference. First pitch, 98 miles an hour from Guthrie. I hit a 3-run homer. We end up winning 3-0. And I think the story goes that you went in the bathroom and you said, holy shit, either something we're gonna win now.
Oh, it's over. we won the World Series right there. That was it right there. That
really?
Was the day.
You knew right there.
Right then. Like, it was just crazy. Like, first game you come back, first pitch, 3-run homer. Like, that's exactly what we've been missing.
Yes, it was.
We hadn't hit a big homer. Like, I mean, we were scrapping, but we hadn't blown anybody out. Like, kind of been like, took our personality yet until he came back and did that. And it was like, holy shit, this is us. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's roll. It's time to go.
And then Tex took off.
Yes, he did. Yes, Tex took off. Because he got off to his historically slow start. Then he was, he finished runner-up MVP that year?
I mean, he had a phenomenal year.
He had 39 homers, something like that.
39 homers, 100 and something, you know.
I was on the train that day, and I was with the Yankees On Demand guys, Brandon and Pete, and we were going to do a shoot the next day. That's the funny part I'll get to. But, and we see, holy shit, Alex hit a home run, first pitch. Like, this is unbelievable. And, like, immediately, just as people who were invested in the team winning, the momentum, the energy changed. And then things only got better because the next day we did a two-hour-long shoot with Edouard Ramirez at the Babe Ruth Museum. I'm like, what? How do we choose? No offense to Edouard, but how do we choose Edouard Ramirez to do a two-hour shoot at the Babe Ruth Museum? I have no idea how we did
it. That shit right there.
Dude, I think that shit's in the trash, man. But we'll try and find it for you.
That's
all right.
Great.
So, Alex, you've been working this year. You know, we were all just talking before about what a great year it was in 2017. You got to work with a lot of these young kids. Mm-hmm. And I think probably a lot of our listeners are wondering, because you, as you said, you're a baseball nerd, you know them, but you also evaluate talent and players.
Mm-hmm.
What, if we go one by one, Judge, let me ask you this first. Mm-hmm. Are there things he can do to cut down the strikeouts and continue to grow on his historic year?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. Look, a guy like Aaron Judge, he's a raw baseball player. You know, I know that he played football, but it's not like me that I was born in Pampers. My father played baseball, so I had a bat in my hand since I was nine. So innately, there were things just like that's all I knew was baseball.
Right.
That's good news for Aaron Judge. So the upside is immense, right? When you think about a guy like Aaron Judge who can hit 50 home runs, he can also drive in 150 runs, right? And he drove about close to 100, right? Around 100 runs, right?
Yeah, and he was over 114 or something?
Yeah.
So as he gets more experience, right, and he understands what an A hack is, what a B hack is, what a C hack is, that's what run producers learn how to do in their careers, right? Is take your RBI when they give them to you. Understand when you need a home run. Understand when you need a double.
Miguel Cabrera.
Understand when you need a ground ball to second base, right?
Yeah.
Understand that not every hack needs to be a home run hack, right? And I'm not just saying him. I'm saying any young slugger.
Yeah.
But if you just take those numbers and you take those 200 strikeouts and you shift them to like 175 and you can add an extra 30 or 25 RBIs, not only does it make him a better player, it makes his team better. And more importantly, like in October when you have great pitchers like CeCe throwing every night, you have to be able to put the ball in play. And this is something that I screamed at for a month. But what people don't understand, and I don't think Sabermetrics really understands just yet, is that what works in a six-month season, and you will choose power over contact any time, in October is exactly reverse. You will actually pick contact over power.
Mm.
And so I think there's great room for coverage, for improvement there.
How about from you? Like when you watch Aaron, where do you think like that next step comes?
I think he's on the right track. Yeah. I mean, I think he does a good job of making adjustments and you know, learning and just trying to be, you know, a better player. So obviously I can't talk mechanics like he can, but I could see that, you know, he's going to be good and you know, he shows up at the ballpark every day is the same, no matter what, you know, no matter the slumps and all that. And I think that's the biggest thing. And I think, you know, he'll be able to work and just continue to get, to grow and get better.
You know, Ryan, I thought he had a tale of three seasons, right?
Yeah.
He started the season like Mickey Mantle, hair on fire, right?
Right.
And then he became Dave Kingman, and he couldn't put the ball in play. And then he ended up like Joe DiMaggio. That's hard to do in one season. But ironically enough, where he gained the most talent from his players, the local media and the national media, was his attitude when he struggled. Because he never budged. And that is such an important element in New York. The guy never budged. And I got to tell you, I was 10
that's
years
hard
older
to, that's
than
hard
him.
To do, man.
And that is hard to do.
Well, yeah. See, that's what impressed me most about him is like you went through that. Actually, think about it. Take it back to the end of last year, right? At end of 2016, he's striking out literally every at-bat, right? I mean, at the end of that year. Then he comes back, starts this year the way he started it, goes through those struggles and bounces back from that. So clearly he must be mentally strong because he bounces back from these struggles like nothing, man, over and over again. By the way, I think like you guys all need to thank Alex and his girlfriend Jennifer for taking Gary Sanchez to lunch,
man,
because
his
season took
fire.
Off after that, man. What did you say at that lunch, Alex, that had Gary like just take off after that?
Yo, how good is he, man?
He is so good. You know, I said that he's a hybrid between you know, Big Poppy and Manny Ramirez, and that raised a lot of eyebrows, but I really meant it. And what I meant by that is, you know, he has the clutch gene like Poppy, where, I mean, he really doesn't give a fuck. The game's on the line, and he doesn't even know if it's a World Series or spring training. He honestly does not give a shit. That is such an important thing, right? And to be able to channel that energy is something that is a little tricky, but I think is very doable, especially you have to understand where Gary comes from in Dominican Republic. It's so far away from, like, you know, New York or what we have to deal with here in America. So we have to be sensitive and compassionate that, you know, there is a language barrier. There's a way of communicating that you can't be overbearing because then he feels like you're being condescending.
Mm.
You can't ignore him because then he feels like you don't care about him, right? So there's this fine balance of pull and push and tug and, like, you know, and when you have that, then you saw it with Manny in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
It's truly remarkable. And what I did, I basically just, you know, fed into his superpower, but also talked about things that I thought were very important, from improving his English skills, from having the most important thing, worrying about the 11 guys and getting that trust, to getting closer to Larry Rothschild and how important that relationship is.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about 5 minutes about hitting. And I said, what I want you to do is really focus, and I'm going to judge you every day for the next month. I don't give a shit if you get a home run or if you get a hit. I want you out there early every day. I want you working on framing. I want you working on blocking balls. I want you to get back in the machine and get that thing up to about 100, and I want you to frame it and hold it. Frame it and hold it. Now, if you make a mistake, you're going to text me. You're going to tell me, what was that mistake? And then we're going to come correct it the next day at 2 p.m. There is no doubt. If you want me in, this is the way it's going to be. I got to tell you, Ryan, see, he was unbelievable. And then he said, holy fuck, can I call you? Because we would text 2 or 3 times a day before the game. How's the routine? He would call me 10, 15 minutes before he would go warm me up.
Yeah.
And he said, Poppy, something different is happening. I got to call you. I said, okay, Poppy, hold on. I'm in the studio. Yeah. What's up, Poppy? I thought it was something with his family or something.
Yeah.
He goes, Poppy, you never talked to me about hitting, but I'm seeing the ball like a watermelon. I said, well, hit that bitch.
Yo,
that's great.
I'm serious right now. Like, you could really manage right now. Like, if you wanted to, like, you could do it right now, man. Like, what you're saying is true. Just the way, and I also think we need to kick everybody else off the Fox set, man. I want Burkhart and I want Alex, and that's all I need for that time. Are you enjoying broadcasting?
Oh, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. You know, and it's so much fun to be able to connect with the fan base. We have the greatest fans in the world, and you know, I'm so proud of our game right now. Number one, we have a great commissioner, Rob Manfred. Tony Petitti's right-hand guy is our chief operating officer, as smartest guy as I've ever met, understands entertainment and television as well as anyone. And that's why we've had such a successful, not only postseason run, besides obviously the great players, but if you look at the All-Star game, if you look at the audio, if you look at what Aaron Judge did, it's a great combination. And I got to tell you, I think, and you may not want to hear this, but I think with just what's happening in the NFL, look, I'm a big NFL fan.
Yeah.
They've left a little opening for us.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
And they continue to do it, and we continue to flourish, and our game's on fire.
And the young players are getting better. It's a bit different names.
Are awesome. And we've never had more people watching postseason and in-season baseball than we are right now in 25 years.
It does. It's funny because a couple years ago, right, it felt like people were like, oh, baseball is taking this step back. You know, it's slow in this instant gratification society. How is it going to keep up? And now it feels like over these last 2 years, baseball has made this big comeback and the momentum is back going and growing with the game. It feels that way.
Yeah, I think so. Even too, with Houston winning, different fan base winning. I mean, these guys have never won. It's a young team. You know, it was an exciting World Series. The Dodgers were back in it. Obviously, if we would have been back in it, I think it would have been historic. You
yeah.
know what I
mean? Oh, those playing ratings. Dodgers, Fox ain't going to say it. You know they weren't happy to see you guys lose those games 6 and 7, man.
But I think I know. I mean, I think the game's in a good place. And, you know, I'm excited for where it's going and watching these young guys. I mean, obviously, you know, for me, being able to watch Judge, I'm a fan of these guys, Sanchi and Judge and Didi. You know, just watching other guys around the league, too. So, it's going to be a lot of fun for the years to come.
Didn't you work with Didi on hitting the ball the other way your last year, or 2015?
That was Carlos Beltran. I worked with him defensively.
Okay, gotcha.
I cannot take any credit for his hitting. I think Carlos did a phenomenal job. And Carlos is one of those guys that has a rare ability to be a great teacher when it comes to hitting. He's a student of the game. He's passionate. And he's a great communicator. And he's got patience. It's just unbelievable. He is going to be a great hitting coach or manager. What I did with Didi was I brought him out early and talked about defense and footwork. I never like to talk about hitting. I think that when you're a great athlete and you're a great hitter like Gary Sanchez and like Didi, it's a reverse engineering, and I don't think a lot of people understand this. The way you make a guy like Ron or make a guy like Ryan or Sanchez hit better is you have to take care of all the secondary stuff. Well, what does that mean? Making sure that you have a routine, making sure that you live by that routine, and making sure that everything else besides hitting is taken care of. So for Didi, it was footwork. It was, I wanted him to catch the ball cleanly and throw the ball cleanly and get back to the Didi from Arizona. Mm-hmm. And what happens, Ryan, when you do that, it clears you. Mm. You go from being 6 foot tall to 7 foot tall in the batter's box. And as a result, then you start smoking. But you have to live it. You have to understand it to understand what frees you up. If you're booting the ball, if you're blocking balls and everyone's annihilating you, then guess what? Your self-esteem is going to be diminished. It's going to lower to a point where if you're a 300 hitter, now you're a 240 hitter. So whatever your superpower is now becomes your weakness, and you hurt yourself and you hurt the team.
Now, amongst the, because CeCe and I, we follow everything you're doing on Instagram. Dude, you're very active on social media.
You know, you're like, you thank my daughter Natasha for that.
Natasha, take care of the social media account.
Yeah. And sometimes I'll put something up, Ryan, and then if you see it go down, it's her. She takes it down.
She goes, she doesn't approve. This isn't your brand.
That is corny. That is corny. You are showing your age. And people say, like, why'd you take it down? I thought the video was good. Natasha took it down.
Oh my God, that's great, man. So I saw this weekend you were doing something. Project Destined, is it called?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, one of the amazing things. I feel like you've done so much cool stuff in the community and different, like, giving back along those lines. What is this one about? What is this project about and the motivation behind it?
Project Destined is one of the most excited I've been about anything I've done in my entire life. And I teamed up with this awesome guy named Cedric Bobo, who came from a single mother just like me, went to Harvard Business School, and then went to worked at Carlyle Private Equity for 11 years, mm-hmm. and just absolutely crushed it. And we have the same vision and inspiration to kind of pay it forward to the next generation. And what we do is we go into communities and pick 15 kids like ourselves, mm-hmm. from inner city kids that come from very poor economic backgrounds, usually have a single mother, usually have parents who have had terrible problems where they've gone to jail, they've gotten sick, they've awful things have happened, but we see these kids have a lot of potential. And what we're trying to do is fight the zip code war, because there's been studies that says if you're raised in this zip code versus this zip code, then the chances are that if you're in this right zip code, you're going to do great things, and if here, you're going to end up either in jail or do some things that you're not right. proud of. So what we do is we bring them in, 20 kids, we bring them in for 3 days, and essentially what we do is we teach them everything there is to learn to know about how to buy a property. You know, what is a cap rate? What is NOI? What is return on investment? What is debt service? And then we get Harvard Business School professor to teach with us the 3 days. We get a real architect pro bono to be the architect. We get a real lawyer pro bono to be their lawyers. And then we break the groups into three groups. And then by the third day, they make a presentation and they make an offer on a building. So three buildings, five buildings, building, building. So by the end, you know, Cedric and I end up buying these properties, and every kid there gets to earn up to 20% of that property. Whoa, whoa. And then those proceeds end up paying for their college.
That's awesome.
That's incredible.
And what you end up seeing, guys, is you see, like, the parent, like, I was doing it all week, and the parents are on the side, like, literally, like, crying, taking notes. And we tell them, like, you can go home. But we fly in a DJ. We fly in a chef. And we want to make it cool to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Listen, not every kid is going to be like CeCe and Alex Rodriguez.
Right.
But if you have an education and you learn about real estate and you learn how to be an entrepreneur, I always say you don't have to wear short polyester and dunk a basketball to get out of the hood. You can also wear a suit and a tie and do some really cool things. And what we're doing is we're empowering them at a young age, and we hope to hook them. Just like we were hooked in basketball and baseball, if we hook them and we teach them, and we teach them the power of ownership, and then we can take that ownership and pay for their college. And the only agreement we make them sign is one day when you have that opportunity, pay it forward to a kid that's a minority, a young girl, or anyone who needs help that doesn't have help, like, you know, other people have really great parents, you know.
That's outstanding. That's a great. I feel like if that was pitched on Shark Tank with Alex as a judge, man, he wouldn't even. You'd be. Yes, I'm in right away, man.
Well, this is not really for camera. Yeah. Maybe it is, but this is something that I'm really passionate about. The Boys and Girls Club saved my life.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. when we see these kids, CeCe, I'm going to invite you one day, and if you can talk to those kids, I would love it.
That'd be great.
Jennifer just popped in. We played her music, and these kids went berserk.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And now we had me as an athlete. We had Cedric, who's this, you know, African-American guy who actually looks like he's an NFL Hall of Fame. He's like this beautiful, strong man, beautiful suit, and what a great role model. Yeah. And then we had Jennifer doing the entertainment and talking to all the, you know, men and young women about, you know, she came from the Bronx. So all three of us came from the hood.
Yeah.
But because we had a hook, an inspiration, baseball, Boys and Girls Club, education, and her entertainment, we were able to go out and do great things, and that we have to pay it forward to the next, you know, generation.
That's awesome.
Boys and Girls Club is the key right there too. Huh? Yeah. Club kids, man. Yeah. I grew up in the club too.
Did you really?
Oh yeah, for sure.
I didn't know that, yep. Man. I mean, I know how active you are with the community with Pitch In Foundation, and then also, like, what I love about CeCe is when he talks about kids. Or I mean, not just your own kids, man. I know, like, you just, you love kids. I mean, you love your own kids.
Yeah, sometimes.
But you love kids, man. You seriously, like, there's just a, you know, you have that in you. You got, like, the Santa Claus effect.
I try to.
Yeah, man, always. By the way, I love the Vanity Fair article with you and Jennifer, man. That was, like, the official, like, because you guys have been.
That was, like,
been,
the official, like, coming out.
Yeah, coming I guess. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm embarrassed because, you know, obviously, like, really smart people read Vanity Fair. I came up reading Sports Illustrated and Baseball America, right?
But you're like an entrepreneur now, man.
Nah,
it's
great.
It was the perfect space.
Yeah, it was good. And the photos are, you know, we won't have you break down specific photos.
No, no. Like, anytime you talk about photos and mirrors, I start kind of. I start mumbling.
They were beautiful. All right, so we had some people like. They've been giving us some questions.
Oh, did we get questions today?
Yeah, we did, man.
Oh, wow.
And
you own it, bro.
Like, dude, come on, man.
Wow.
Through for us. Do I get to read, like, all the nice things they say about us before the question again? CeCe, you got a kick out of that. Like, it's very self-serving. I love to read that, like, CeCe and Ryan are the best. Although I sent you a screenshot. One review the other day was just, CeCe is amazing. And that's it. Yeah. It's like, yeah, he is amazing. I agree. All right. So, actually, then if I don't need to do that, I wrote them down. All right. So... I can't tell you what these numbers stand for, but Bob 7373-8392 has a question. He's a droid. He has a question for us. He says, Alex, how would players react to an electronic strike zone? And CeCe, how would you feel about it as a pitcher?
You want to go? I'll go. I don't know. I mean... You know, I hate umpires. So any way to get it right, man. But for me, I think, I mean, if we actually really had to throw the ball over the plate, I think these guys would be hitting 600. You know what I'm saying? So I think we kind of need that, you know, I need an inch here. I need an inch here. You know what I mean? I mean, if we went to that box and got electronic, I think it'd get real hard for pitchers, I feel like.
I agree. I mean, look, I know computers is taking over our games. Ivy League's taking over our game. I think 17 or 18 of the GMs come from Ivy League schools. But it is still a human element. It's so important to understand kind of the same thing I'm telling you about Field with Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge. You know, if CeCe's out there and he's pitching and the score's, you know, 3-1 and he's pitching, you know, pitch number 118 – And he's hitting this, and he's been hitting it for fucking 7-8 innings.
Yeah.
He needs to get that fucking pitch. And I'm a hitter talking, right?
Yeah.
And you know, if he's getting that pitch, he can't get this pitch, right?
Right.
And I think the human element, when you have great umpires, and look, I've never been the biggest fan of umpires, but there's some great ones out there. Take a guy like Jerry Davis or Jerry Lane, who
Jerry
really
Lane's great.
Yeah.
Understand
yeah. Shout out
personality,
Jerry.
Understand you know, effort, understand experience, and not everyone gets treated the same because you can't treat a 20-year veteran like you have a 1-year. Like, right, there is, you got to kind of tone it down a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Back in the day, it was crazy.
It was bad back in the day.
That Levon Hernandez game.
Oh,
stuff
my
like
gosh,
that,
man. Yeah, and Ken Kaiser, like, if you signed 10 balls for him, he wouldn't call a strike. So every time I saw Kaiser, I would say, hey, Kaiser, you need some balls? And I know I would have 3 home runs in the bag. I mean, I would not ever strike out. If I didn't swing, it wasn't a strike. But I love Ken Kaiser, you know, big wrestling fan.
Yeah,
but, you know, if you go to computers, the one thing is, like, if the game is 9-0 and you're going to have that computer, it's going to make the game worse.
Yeah.
Right? You still need a general out there to quarterback the game, to move the pace forward, to be able to communicate. At the end of the day, the fights are over because you have that, but you still need someone to manage the game, manage personalities. And when the problem that I see with young umpires, see, is that when you're a young umpire and you're 23 years old and you got a first year in the big leagues, you've never dealt with a confrontation.
Yeah.
And you really never will. Until a big moment comes and you're not going to know what to do. Mm-hmm. Versus back in the day, Earl Weaver, Lou Piniella, Billy Martin, it was all about confrontation. And there's a seasoning that comes with that. And that was a big part of maturing as a Major League umpire.
That's good answers. All right, this one comes from Old Greatness. Yeah, we got the best names on these reviews. The difference in your prep for Shark Tank versus a MLB on Fox broadcast studio session.
Yeah, so there's no prep in Shark Tank. Literally, it's cold.
Makeup. Oh, wow. And that's
a lot of makeup. I have an army of people putting makeup on.
You don't know who's coming out. You don't know any. Like,
you don't even have a clue of man, women, what the subject is, what kind of business. No, you have no nothing. So there is no prep. And I think that's why they're in their ninth season and they're still thriving, is because it's organic and it's real. Mm. And you know, once the entrepreneurs come out, I mean, it's war. If you want that deal, like, you start saying bad things about Mark Cuban and Mr. Wonderful and all that. Because
you want it.
Yeah, I mean, it's game on, you know?
All right, Matt from Astoria, Queens says, what's your favorite moment as a Yankee besides 2009?
I mean, for me, it's easy. It was coming back in 2015, and I would just say literally that whole season, because I remember, Ryan, that when I was in 14, I would, you know, cry myself to sleep. I would watch CeCe playing, and it was Jeter's last year, and I was so sad and angry at myself for putting myself in this situation and for handling the way I did. I would cringe, but I thought it was over. Yeah. I said, shit, this is... Not only is the Yankee career over, but fuck my life. I'm a pariah. You know, I put myself in a situation where I'm not going to be able to come back from this. And coming back and I remember one game. I never told you this, but it was like, you know, I was DHing, so I didn't have to go out and throw and do it. It was great. It was like Poppy. I was always with a bat in my hand. I looked in the mirror, and it was about 6:50 for a 7:05 game. And I looked in the uniform. I had my pinstripes on. I'm like, holy fuck, I'm 40 years old. I'm hitting cleanup. I'm wearing a Yankee uniform, the same uniform that DiMaggio and Yogi Berra and Whitey Ford were. And here I am at 40 hitting cleanup. And it's me, and I'm doing it the right way, and I'm happy, and I'm so thankful. And regardless of what happens in the next 3 hours, I'm one of the luckiest motherfuckers to be one of 750 to play in the major leagues and one of 25 to play in the greatest franchise in the greatest city in the world, New York City.
You know, you bring up the 2014 year a lot. I'm wondering, was there like a conversation you had that still stands out to you, or any book you read or a quote or anything that like became sort of a mantra or a driving force to get you back from pariah to this amazing place you're in?
Boy, I wish it was just that easy, or one thing or one moment. It wasn't. It was dozens of things.
Yeah.
Number one, it was turning the lens inward and understanding that I didn't have to just, if you think about a house and you do a rehab, right? People think about, like, I can do windows and paint the house and fix the roof and do a little landscape. No, I understood that I needed to tear the house down and start again one brick at a time. And with the full season, it allowed me to do that and build it back up. The hardest thing I would say coming back was having to talk to my daughters and tell her about the mistakes that I made, and really having a full understanding that if they said, "Daddy, we want you to be done with baseball," I committed that I would be done with baseball and I would walk away from the game. And when Cynthia and Natasha and Ella, I remember telling Cynthia, I said, "Cynthia, you know, we're on a table like this in my office," and I said, "We're going to do this talk in 3 weeks." What took me 5 months to build the courage to talk to my girls. It was by far the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. And I said, "Cynthia, I'm probably not going to be able to get through this phone call. But if the first or second inning of the conversation I start breaking down, please take over." Now, it's great that she has a psychology degree and she has some great superpowers around this kind of subject, which I'm not so great at. But anyway, sure enough, I started talking. I broke down like in the first inning of the conversation. And I said to her, I said, before walking in, I said, "They're going to be listening to me, but they're going to be looking at you. Mm. And I hope that we're together on this, because if I don't have your blessing, my girls are not going to be able to really understand what Dad is saying." So that's exactly what happened. As I was talking to them, I saw them both shift to Cynthia. And Cynthia was amazing, and she spoke, and I did very little speaking, to be honest with you. And then by the end, they said, Dad, we love you, and we want you to go out there and, you know, hopefully, I hope you can make the team because you're old.
Not only made it, but 30 and 100. All right. This one's for, actually, for this is always fun. People like this. It's from Jimmy Segee. He wants to know, who were the best clubhouse pranksters you guys ever came across? And were there any this year, CeCe?
I think always the Guardy. Like, the shit that he pulls off is incredible. Really? Like, Guardy would do some shit that, like, you wouldn't even know for like a month later. You know what I'm saying? Like, he pulls pranks like crazy. Like, one time I saw him take, remember he took Flynn's battery out of his,
God.
You know, you got the little thing for your truck.
Is this Anthony Flynn?
Yeah.
Okay. He used to be the video coordinator.
Video coordinator. Yep. The thing that put your alarm on. He took the battery out of there and put a picture of himself in there. So Flynn's going back to the dealership, great. Like his truck is broke, like he's going back and forth, and he has all these appointments and stuff, and like, and this is Guardy, sliced his shit open and put a picture of himself in there.
Instead,
like,
of the battery.
Bro, he's unbelievable. Like, oh my, the gosh, shit that he would, man, do is crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, it was like he had a full-time job to think of this kind of shit.
That's good.
You know, for me, it was AJ. AJ was a guy that when he came in 09, just was full of tricks, was full of energy, obviously brought the pie, which is something that for us was so damn refreshing, because for so long we were like a bunch of stiff Goldman Sachs boys, and I was like the damn leader of that group. So to bring somebody to open things up and relax a little bit, it was something that we really needed.
Yeah, he was the beginning of that prankster, yeah, shit too. AJ was.
AJ,
yeah,
was? Yeah. But you always tell me, like, you need a thing, right? Like, this year you guys had the thumbs down, yeah, thing. And 09,
all good
it was the
teams,
pies.
All, know? Good teams have a thing. Right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, for sure.
You, like, the Rangers that one year had the, what were they doing? Their antler thing?
Yeah,
or something,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
was,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that shit. That fucking pissed me off. Yeah.
Right, exactly, man. I know. When I saw a couple Astro thumbs downs after Game 7, I was,
yeah,
like, easy.
Yeah, we'll leave that alone.
Yeah, leave that alone. All right. Matt B. from Long Island. This was an interesting question. He said, and maybe this is one kind of good to wrap things up with. He said, did you know, going into your last game, did you think that night it would be your last game? And was the way that you were received, because that was, I mean, I was there. It was an incredible atmosphere, the way the fans embraced you. Did that influence your decision at all, or did it give you closure?
Yes, it did. I knew that was my last game. It was interesting. I wanted to be as special as you can be at. I didn't have any expectations. I was very clear of my past, and I thought that no longer I had a blind spot. So I was self-aware of that. I remember Jason Zillow, our PR director, when we announced in the press conference that day would be my last game. I remember walking in the hallway after, walking to the locker room, and I said to him, now, for whatever reason, like, Fridays in the summer is just a tough ticket sell. So for us, you know, people are going out to the Hamptons, people are traveling, and we had sold, I don't know, 15, 20,000 tickets, not too many. And I said to Zillow, if nobody shows up, I'll volunteer to buy some tickets. So at least it looks like people cared.
That's great.
And he calls me that night and he goes, bro, you're not going to believe it. I said, what happened? He said, within like 10 minutes of you calling your, you know, retirement, the internet broke and we sold out within like 15 minutes. And they got me really excited. And then obviously having my family here, my daughters, my mother, and everybody just flying for the last game, and the way the fans, like, literally it was heartwarming. So
doubling your first at bat.
Yeah, also it was, and we won the game, and I got a chance to play third base. I was like a 10-year-old again. So I knew that with Hal Steinbrenner, what he did for me and my family to give me an opportunity to rebuild that house and get back. I'm here today because Hal Steinbrenner gave me an opportunity to wear his uniform again, and that's something that, A, I wanted that to be kind of the end of it for me, and wear that uniform means a great deal to me today.
Alex, thanks for doing this, man.
Thank you guys for having me.
For sure. Thank you.
That was fun.
ThePlayersTribune.com